Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage, the podcast. I'm Chet Haas from the Developer Relations team.
You forgot already? I'm Romangi from the Android Toolkit team.
I'm Tor Norby from the Android Tools team.
And today we have...
Melanie Getz from the Material Design Components Library team.
Oh, welcome.
That's a mouthful.
Right? Yes. So that must mean we're talking about material today.
Yes, we are.
Okay. That's the material for
That's
today.
Good. It'd be really awkward if we were going to talk about something that none of us understood instead of one person in the
room. I'm sure Tor would love to talk about Gradle and Lint.
Oh, God.
Sure.
Save us. Save us.
Do you have an acronym or like a shorter name for your team that you use?
So we usually use MDC.
MDC.
Which is less of a mouthful, which just stands for Material Design Components.
That makes more sense. I was thinking like Minnesota... Drilling Corporation.
Not quite.
So what are material design components exactly?
So material design components is a library that implements material design. And it has been forked from the Android support library, but it is now also being designed in congruence with iOS and web platforms so that you can build your app.
So it's a set of libraries for all the platforms we support with material design.
Exactly.
So you have the same components across, like MDC has the same components on all of those platforms?
Yeah, exactly. So you can be building your app on Android and use the same text field component on iOS and on the web. So you can prototype and build things out to spec at the same time.
So how does that... Hang on a second.
No, it's my turn.
You always talk too much. How does that, like, do you end up doing least common denominator APIs? Because clearly there are different capabilities on all the platforms, right?
Yeah, so we try to implement to spec, to the designer's spec, as closely as possible. We've actually, one of our bigger initiatives the past quarter or so has been making sure that the spec is aligned and the implementation is aligned across platforms. There has to be different hacky ways to implement on iOS versus Android, as some things are provided natively on some platforms versus others. But we try and make sure everything is pixel perfect and exact as possible.
So that, that means that they're cross-platform widgets? We're just trying to interrupt today.
I'm out.
So basically the UI, like a button on the web and a button on Android will have the exact same pixel representation.
Almost exactly, yeah. Obviously, for web, the screen size is bigger. Okay. There's other factors at play. But for iOS and Android, it's almost exactly the same.
Okay.
So I was going to ask before I was really interrupted several times.
Something else I wanted to ask
Yeah, me too.
Okay, I'm definitely out now. So you mentioned cross-platform, but just to be clear, it's not a cross-platform library. It's a cross-platform design language. And
exactly.
You have multiple implementations that are native to each platform, right?
Exactly. Android is more closely tied to the support library in Android X and Jetpack than the other platforms, as they're developed on GitHub, which we do as well, but we also released via Maven and are more closely tied to the system.
Okay, so if people are going to include the MDC for their Android application, they're probably going to get it from the Maven repository, or do you expect people to... Like get things from GitHub? Like where do you
Yeah,
care?
So we release monthly now. We've had 5 alpha releases and you can just import that directly to your project and depend on our most recent release was alpha 5. But we sync out to GitHub every other week so you can see more incremental changes and updates and developers are free to look at that and report issues or prototype and test using the code that we have on GitHub as well.
So you said you've had 5 alpha releases. Does that mean that this is not stable yet? Or this is like alpha releases of the next
Exactly.
version?
So this has not been released as stable yet.
Okay.
Meaning the API could change. But we plan to release beta really soon here. We are working with AppCompat and Android X to get that stable.
This is alpha of the next release or just alpha overall? You don't have a non-alpha version of MDC?
No, so we do have a stable version.
Oh, okay.
1.1.0 was released,
I
believe. I
remember that release.
Yes. in
a long time ago.
Yeah, a while ago. July, I think the Alpha 01 was released in October, and we've released almost monthly since then.
Okay, so this is an alpha of what, 1.2, 2.0, 1.7?
It's still 1.1.0, alpha 05.
So we're still working on 1.1.0.
Yes.
It's not, so I guess the latest stable will be 1.0, and then 1.1 is still an alpha.
I see. Okay. All right.
So you can update your Gradle file now, Chet.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll get right on that.
Do you know how to do that, Chet?
All right. So example, so one of the dynamics of material early on that I remember a little too well from the Lollipop release was a lot of things in the spec. A lot of things. Animations, it would have curves in sort of illustrated form, but not a lot of information about, you know, the details of how you use this.
It also had things we could not implement.
Yeah, that was fun too. I think they were just sort of doing that just to tweak the engineers.
Inspirational.
So the question is, what do you support in MDC and how does that relate to the recommendations that are in the current spec?
So we've spec'd out a lot of the components. Some of the major ones, such as text field, chips, bottom sheets, buttons, extended fab, regular fab.
Are there any widgets that sort of that are in the standard Android toolkit that does not have a material version? In other words, can you build a UI purely on MDC components, or do you still have to use, let's say, button or checkbox from the platform?
So most of our components actually inherit from platform widgets and do styling and theming on top of it. So a big push of the new cross-platform material components is the fact that we can theme things from an app level, such as change the shape of all your components, like give everything cut corners, or affect the typography and color. And so those aspects, such as shape theming, aren't prevalent in the Android platform widgets. But
there's nothing I would be missing. Like if I got a spec for a UI that had checkboxes and radio buttons and scroll bars and things, all those are available as MDC components. So that I should be able to fully theme my app, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Scroll bars. Tor, this is not a desktop.
No, but I just feel like, and you know, I might have misunderstood, but I feel like I remember the early version of Material Library. It was like it had some really material unique buttons, like the floating action button.
Correct.
But it didn't have like every possible widget, right? Whereas now it sounds like that you do.
So things such as a checkbox, you're correct. That is still the Android framework, but we will have a styled version that inherits from a checkbox that is a chip that...
I see. So you don't recommend in Material to use checkboxes. You should instead use a chip.
That depends on the use case, but there's a lot of...
Is chip that little thing that's like a rounded... what is the name of that shape?
You know,
like square with rounded sides. And there's like text in the middle, right? And there's typically like a dismiss button. Like it's the thing you would like put for tags or something.
Exactly, for
in
tags.
In Gmail, the to field creates a bunch of chips.
I see. So if I want to have, I'm trying to think of a good use case for checkboxes now, right?
Settings?
Well, like I'm thinking of, you know, my favorite UI, the calendar. no, but you know, there's a bunch of checkboxes there. You know, like is this an all day event or whatever?
Well, yeah, like
I presume I wouldn't have a chip
list,
that
right?
says this is all day, right? How would I, what? Go ahead.
Keep has a checkboxes for the list that you're
Yeah, for example.
Creating,
is right? that, well, how would you, do you know about the Keep app or the Keep web?
How would
you change that to be sort of MDCE?
So Keep actually did a overhaul in the fall, I believe, and updated to the new Google Material theme. And they ended up using a lot of the web and native components that are part of our library, but themed specifically for Google.
I see. Okay.
But they have checkboxes.
They probably
cheated.
Right?
So, they do have checkboxes.
So on Android, they're actually just using the checkbox class
component.
From Android
Correct.
As opposed
okay.
to...
So,
they're not
going to
get those rounded corners.
And you keep mentioning themes. In particular, you just mentioned the Google theme. And that's something new. Like, so when you say themes, you're talking about themes inside the app. So why should developer cares? What is that? Because Material Design was a theme as far as the Android platform was concerned. But now you're talking about themes within Material Design?
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, so with the initial rollout of Material Design, the emphasis was to make it bold and consistent and usable. And a big part of that was creating this consistency, which was really great for usability because people could go between apps on different platforms and understand how to use them. But a lot of developers felt that it didn't let them express their brand in a way that felt authentic. And there was a lot of feedback that every app looked like Gmail.
That's a good point. Yeah, sometimes when I look at the you know, the app switcher on my phone, like if two apps are red in the screenshots, like I'm not sure which one is which.
Exactly. So the point of material theming was to allow apps to better express their brand. And a big aspect of that was being able to tweak things on the theme level, such as color, typography, and shape, and let that percolate down to all the different components without having to change every single view.
So that, yeah, that seems to be the key, because colors, we had that capability in the original material design. You could choose the primary and secondary colors. So I imagine you go further than that for colors.
Yeah, I feel like Material 1 was really pushing the... Is whimsical the right word? I mean, I feel like all the samples I had was like, you know, blue and pink together. It was like, it was always these like really contrasting.
It was complementary colors for definition of complementary.
They only had two hard-coded constants. That was the problem.
I mean, it felt like I'd gone down the toy store aisle. You know what I mean? It was just in terms of color choice. But I don't see that recently. So has a color recommendation sort of evolved?
Yeah, so the color recommendation is more now to express your brand's theme. We still have the same color primary, color secondary, color primary variant, but they're used in a way in the material theme that provides a baseline and shows you kind of how those can be applied to every component. But we encourage developers now to take that theme that we have and override with colors that match their specific branding needs.
I thought there were also more colors in the new themes, right? Like there used to be, you know, three or four different related colors, and now there's a dozen?
All of them.
About a dozen. Yeah. We've added, the original app compat themes had color primary, color secondary. We now have added, or color primary variant. We've now added color secondary, color surface, a bunch of attributes that go beyond the original app compat themes. So when developers use our components, we now recommend and actually enforce that they use one of our themes or our bridge themes in order to make those components work, because our components will reference those attributes that are declared in our theme.
And so that's for colors. You mentioned typography. The other day I saw a piece of code, I think, that was using Material Design components or Material Design 2, and I saw that because with text before, we used to, on Android, you could choose between small text, medium text, and large text, and that was about it. And I saw like mention of H1, H2, H3, like different header sizes that remind me of HTML. So is that from Material Design components?
Correct. We have a typography theming system. We have semantic namings for different text attributes, such as headline or subtitle. And within that, there is aspects such as character spacing and font and size and all the other parts attributes that make up typography.
So I can do things like this is a quotation or this is a code snippet. And then it would like either use sort of the italics with indentation for quotes or monospace font for code, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Instead of having to hard code the size and look of each font every time, you can just reference that semantic naming.
What's wrong with SP? That's what I want to know.
So it sounds like you standardized what a lot of applications ended up doing themselves, because, you know, in any large app, you had to create this kind of semantic themes and styles inside your Android app. But now...
Yeah, but the difficulty, and this is, you know, me, and I'm afraid I've done this on the podcast before, but me ranting on the styling system, right?
Oh, where, I thought you were going to ask for, like, lint rules.
Oh, yeah, I do that too. No, you know, like, if you wanted to, in CSS, make a style for, like, this is a warning, right? So you make a warning class. You say, hey, the color should be red, right? But if you want to then have a button that you want to apply the warning to, if you say style equals, you know, @style/warning... you now replace all the button styling. So your button loses to 9 patches and it just looks like text with red text, right? You couldn't mix and match. And so it was really hard for developers to make these logical font styles and apply them, right? Because you couldn't apply multiple style classes.
So I think that's the main value prop of the new material theming, is that you can have these baseline styles for a button, for example, that percolate through your entire theme. But then if you have an error button, you could apply a theme overlay that overwrites the colors to be, for say, red, and maintains the rest of the styling.
So you provide all the theme magic to be able to mix these.
Exactly.
That's great.
They do the hard work for you.
Yeah. That reminds me, since I spoke about the error style, because we talked about the palette, right? And I feel like, I don't know about material design, but certainly for, you know, desktop themes and the IDE and so forth, often color themes don't define an error color and a warning color. And so then you're in this trouble where, okay, you know, I'm doing this form in my app and I want to actually say, hey, the phone number is required. And then there's no suitable color. So then you hard code red, which isn't great. So exactly. Does MDC define an error color, or if not, could you?
Yes, color error is actually one of the colors defined in the theme.
Awesome.
And now you can write forms.
Nice.
Yeah, for that exact reason. For example, you wanted to change your error color at some point, for example, for dark mode.
Yeah.
Instead of having to go remap all those places where you hard-coded red,
right,
it would just change with the alteration of one theme attribute.
So another very interesting thing you mentioned is shapes, especially you talked about cut corners on buttons. And
which I wanted to point out, it's really cool that MDC allows you to cut corners.
I was going to make a reference to Battlestar Galactica.
Which one?
The new one.
Yeah.
Cause
why?
Because haven't you noticed, like, all their sheets of paper, they have cut corners? Like, to look.
Well, they were trying to save on resources. I mean, that was the only paper in the universe, right?
Anyway, so shapes. cut corners. Are there other shapes? Can you use any kind of shapes? Like, where are shapes applied except on buttons?
So right now, we actually have our material shape drawable, which is the class that allows for these concepts called shape appearance models to be applied to the components, integrated in, I believe, 8 components, button, chip, bottom sheet, text field, fab, extended fab are all examples of that. And right now we have 2 different corner families, cut and rounded, and you can define those in your shape appearance overlay for a specific view with a value such as cut 8 dp, and that would affect whatever component that you apply that to. But we also have these high level shape appearance models for the entire theme, so all of the small components will be mapped to a shape theme called the shape appearance small component, and tweaking that will affect all of the components that reference that unless they have an overlay that overrides that.
So are you saying you can use any shape you want as long as it's one of those two? Or
yeah, for now it's just those two.
Okay, actually, when you said cut corners, in my mind, I was imagining rounded corners. So in what way is corner not? Is it just like
cut corners?
You could, I mean, you could cut it in a semicircle if you want.
That's what I was imagining.
It's like, almost as if you took scissors and cut off the
edge. So it's like a folded thing.
Yeah,
okay,
folded
I got it.
Cut in a straight line.
Who cuts a corner?
Our Dentalab Shrine uses cut corners everywhere.
They should call them dog-eared.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's edgy.
Yeah, okay.
Just for tour. Everyone else will say cut corners.
I want a tear shape. Like that, I think that would be cool. Like
to,
you know,
to cutting edge.
Yeah, the design guidelines.
In a prototype, you know, you want to use Comic Sans and like the tear shape on everything so people understand this is not a polished product yet.
This is a piece of paper that
will
be ripped.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks for that feature suggestion.
Yeah, this is what
huge.
I do.
I'll
this
bring
is
that back
value
to the designers.
For the podcast is feature ideas.
You remember the napkin look and feel from Swing?
Yeah,
we need napkin material.
Napkin
it was
awesome.
A theme for a UI toolkit on desktop that made everything look like it was drawn on a napkin. And that's how you would show your prototypes because it's clear that it's not finished. So we need a version of that in material design.
Yeah, great feature request.
So I want to ask, wait, before I do, you said something earlier about bridge theme or bridge theming? But what did you mean?
So the way in which an app can migrate over to our themes, we've tried to make it easier by providing this concept called bridge themes, which extend directly from the app compat theme. So there'll be a material components theme, no action bar light that inherits from app compat, no action bar light. And the bridge version of this has just inherited from the app compat and added only the attributes that are needed for our theme enforcer. So for example, say the bottom sheet component references a color surface attribute that isn't in the app compat theme. it would throw an error if you tried to use that component without restyling it with a attribute that you had predefined in your theme. And so to prevent that error and crash at runtime, we have provided these bridge themes, which allow developers to just opt in to each of the styles. So instead of in our full theme, we declare all these default style res for each component. So text field will have a reference to the default text appearance or text field style. And the bridge theme won't have any of those preset. So you'll get all the attributes, but you can opt in to each of the default styles when you're ready to transition over. So this is meant to make it easier for apps that are already relying on App Compat to not have to make a commitment to using all of our styles at once. They can just use have the attributes and migrate over one by one.
Yeah, that sounds super useful, especially considering how confusing and complicated it can be to deal with themes and styles already.
Yeah, like I'm sort of wondering like how it even works. So the problem that Tor pointed out, you know, huge problem in how we do theming and styles that, you know, people slam into eventually. It's like, yeah, you kind of have to do everything. It's mix and match is very difficult. I don't understand how the MDC theming gets around that so that you can easily, like you said earlier, oh yeah, that's one of the advantages to our system. How?
Well, I actually heard her say that it would crash without this. And like crashing sounds to me like an advantage, because what I used to see in theming is that if you don't look carefully, you're missing something. So your app just looks ugly. And, you know, on behalf of developers, often developers don't see that. It's like, oh, it looks fine to me. You know, whereas a designer and team's going to be like, that looks terrible. What happened? And so if there's some, you know, enforcement mode that you mentioned, that actually seems like a good thing. Although it seems like you've gone even further and you're making it have a reasonable fallback instead.
Well, it sounded like the ability to have overlays in a way that the base components don't. Like the problem you pointed out is like, oh, I want this thing to be red, and therefore you blew away everything else in the theme on that button, right? Your example from before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it sounded like you can do sort of individual theming things on the MDC components.
I thought it was on a per theme basis. So if I'm using App Compat, no action bar.
It is fascinating to see a conversation between two people who have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah, we're exposing our ignorance here. Actually, yeah, set us straight.
So if I'm trying to understand your question, the way that it works is that the bridge theme has all of, it inherits everything from App Compat. So you're not going to be, we're not overriding things such as in the case where the red text got rid of all the previous styling.
Yep.
This is going to be transferring all of the styling from App Compat. So you'll be keeping the full theme that you already had, and we're just adding a couple extra attributes, such as color surface that didn't exist in App Compat. So then if you, for example, use our bottom sheet and decide to reference the style which references color surface instead of Android color background, if you weren't using our theme, there would be an unexpected behavior because color surface wouldn't have been defined and the component wouldn't know where to look or what to do.
Okay. So it's specifically for the new attributes that are introduced by the material design components.
Exactly. Right. And so then the full theme has these default style res. So for material button, we have a preset theme that has a background that's color primary and has different states based on for accessibility. And if you want to use that, you can migrate to referencing that in your bridge theme by just adding the attribute def style res and then referencing the material button style if you're using the bridge theme. However, the full theme will have all of that already baked in, if that makes sense.
Sure.
And chat is still lost.
Sure.
Don't pretend.
Any clarification?
No, this is good. Well, let's move on.
I get it.
I was also curious, what was difficult? So you said you forked the components and basically created a bunch of stuff. Not new, right? You are inheriting from all the App Compat components that you're adding on to. But what was tricky? So when you talk about the new drawable that you created to do the theming with folded corners? Is that what we're calling this now? The dog ears.
Dog ears.
What was hard about that in the implementation side?
So I think some of our biggest challenges come from the fact that we have lots of internal users already at Google. So every time we make a small change, we affect lots of people and can break lots of people by moving a pixel. So when the designers are trying to iterate and we're trying to work with the other platforms and make sure that everything's to spec, shifting things even a little bit can cause a big upheaval downstream with all of our users. So that was one of the
disadvantages, I guess, of having pixel accurate, you know, UIs that people then go, oh, well, then I can just do pixel-based tests. Mm-hmm. I'll just do screenshot comparisons, whereas like in Android, you typically didn't do that because it would look so dramatically different on different screen sizes and densities.
We had similar issues in the early days of Holo and then Material Design when we were tweaking, let's say, the anti-aliasing of text, and suddenly everything would look slightly off.
I've heard from our constraint layout engineers that they have a hard time updating the version of constraint layout used in Google Apps because there's pixel-based tests and the layout algorithms change slightly. And oops. Yeah.
Okay. So that's one problem. I guess I was also thinking of areas where the architecture, the original components, or the app compat version of those made it tricky for you to give them flexible theming or shaping or the colors that you're adding or whatever, right? I have talked to some people that have worked on some material design components. It sounded like there were a bunch of hoops to jump through to sort of feed in the flexibility that you needed.
Yeah. For example, when we were implementing shape theming, one thing that we wanted to make sure that we had was a big aspect of material design is making sure that we show elevation and shadows. And for example, shadows is something that was added on
Lollipop.
Yep. And so we had to use gradients in order to fake those and bake them in for backward compatibility, which was difficult. Yeah. And then following the material design spec, like for example, when we're implementing dark mode, those same shadows aren't going to be visible. So we had to come up with new ways to show elevation.
Do we have white shadows in dark mode?
Yeah. On material design,
we do. I feel like in Hollow, didn't we have like a blue gas kind of a...
The dead Smurf.
Dead Smurf, yeah.
It's like you splat a Smurf on the screen.
There was some sort of effect, you know, when you were scrolling that was sort of indicating...
It was everywhere.
Yeah.
It was
interesting.
Blue.
Yeah.
So dark mode has no shadows at all. I hadn't thought about
it. So not exactly. We actually show elevation instead in dark mode by using these translucent overlays that make things that are elevated lighter. So they come more to the foreground.
Yeah.
Oh, that's clever.
Closer to the light.
Huh. How does that work on iOS? Do they have a shadow concept? Sorry, I don't use
the wrong podcast for that question.
Well, I heard this was a toolkit that also works on iOS, right?
So yeah.
It sounded like it's supposed to be sort of pixel equivalent between the platforms. So do people who use material design on iOS want it to look like material design, or do they style it? Yeah, they do. Okay.
Yeah. As far as I'm aware, for example, cards on Android and cards on iOS should have the same shadow elevation look.
Okay.
And I'm not totally familiar with the technical implementation.
Yeah, you work on the Android implementation of the... Okay.
You can set shadows on layers on iOS. So you can put shadows everywhere.
Okay. All right.
And we do have one limitations in our shadowing system. I don't know if you run into that, but it only works... The new shadows since Lollipop, they only work on... Wait, I always have to think about that. Convex objects, convex shapes. Was that an issue or...
Yeah, so shadows, because that was how they were originally baked in, and so I'm not totally familiar with...
Roma, I think all the material components I can think of are convex, right?
Well, but it's because they can't be concave because of the limitation.
It would expose it, yeah.
I think to answer your question, in the Shadows post API 21, all are convex shapes. I believe.
I can't think of something
I need to think of another use case for.
Yeah. I mean, if you gave people the ability to have arbitrary drawable shapes, like, you know, they could subclass yours and use theirs, and all of a sudden they cut out holes in the middle, correctly transparent, but the shadow would.
Yeah.
In Material Design Component, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I've seen bottom toolbar or bottom sheet or whatever it's called, with kind of an indentation in the middle where the fab sits. And that creates a concave shape for the bar.
But I think the shadows are always below, right? So is that the workaround?
It depends on the position to the light source.
Right, but it used to be up at the top of the light screen, right?
You can't configure that yourself, can you? I thought it was built
in. No, you can't. Yeah, it's built in. But there's two light sources.
That's why there's no top.
But we should be able to detect the sensor in the direction of the sun and then actually do correct positional lighting, right?
You're mentioning that.
So I believe the Skia graphics team handles most of the shadowing that's done on Android. But for a few use cases like that, I didn't personally work on bottom navigation bar, but I do believe that we have fake shadows with gradients.
Yeah, that makes sense.
As well.
Okay.
So they're not the native built-in Android versions.
But that's one of the areas where you're running into limitations of the platform.
Yes. PSA, Skia is the rendering engine under Android UI rendering.
As of P.
Right. So all the rendering goes through there, and therefore that is where the shadowing happens. We used to have shadowing that was separate, but then they took that over and we're working on stuff there. Yep. All right.
And we're one of the reasons why there are limitations in the shadows.
Yes. You know, it turns out it's really hard to do shadows that fast. I don't know why. I mean, you would think it'd be easier, right? Because it's not even opaque. It's not even like the full density of the object. It's just like this translucent thing. It should be easy. Engineers, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
One of the complications in the toolkit that I'm aware of is around text. So text view is this crazy, crazy class. I don't think it's got...
To be fair, it's not specific to our toolkit. Text is complicated always.
Yes. And it's why, you know, at least in the built-in text view, that's where all the text field functionality sits too, you know, and it's just hidden by an attribute. So, well, not even hidden, it's exposed, right? So a text view can be editable. Now it's a text field.
A button can be editable.
Yeah. By accident.
And it has, and a button has autofill. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, powerful. With all the typography things you're doing, did you re-implement any of this, or is this basically built on top of the built-in text view mechanism?
So I actually joined about 8 months ago, and most of the typography was already finished by the time I joined.
Lucky
so I don't
you.
Have,
yeah, you,
I know.
I think you've dodged a major
I think bullet. So too, because that was one that caused a lot of, like we talked about, screen diff issues and breaking clients. So I'm not actually sure the exact answer to that. Okay. I do believe it's built on top of...
Well, I think your answer is enough. It was hard.
The Android text appearances.
I mean, Chris Baines had done something a couple of years before MDC, when the original material components were being done out of the support library. He did the original, the text view with the field hint thing and the animation behavior. So maybe they sort of started on something that he'd hacked his way through.
Exactly.
Before?
There are some things that could not be done because they were private APIs, and the text team has been slowly opening up more APIs in the text area of the UI toolkit over the years.
Although that would still be a problem. You go back to what release?
We go back to 15.
Wow.
Okay.
That's great.
That's pretty impressive even.
Where was that driven by, do you know? Like the version choice? Is that like a internal apps requirement, or
isn't that what Android X does?
I think that is what Android X is.
So you just go back to standard Android X.
Android Studio defaults to 15, by the way. But I feel like some of the Android X libraries recently have bumped up the requirement. Not all of them, but some of them.
I think it is on a per module or per library basis.
Yeah, but I think 15 is sort of that's the best you can do at this point.
And so we talked a lot about the colors and themes and styles and stuff like that. But are there other functionalities that are part of the material design components? Cool animations, new features, things that are not part of the standard components on Android?
Yeah, so part of the library is we're always actively developing new components. We have a bunch on the roadmap, from progress indicators to toggle button groups to menu dropdowns. And a lot of these were not prevalent in the original Android framework. And we're building them out to spec with the other platforms and the designers. So although there are components that existed in the original Android design support library, we are now building much far and beyond that and getting into more complex, multifaceted components that
Are there some that are particularly highly requested from users? They're like, oh, I need Date Picker or...
Yeah, Date Picker is one of them. Date Picker...
I wish you luck. Enjoy that one.
That's in active development right now. Mm,
it will be for some
time. There's also
time.
The Time Picker. Yes. That's a fun one too.
What's that?
The Time Picker is also...
Oh yeah, both of them. They go together and you just... yeah, you think you're done. And then the bugs start coming in.
Those progress indicators...
Oh, and that one just goes on and on and on.
Goes on forever. If you're indeterminate.
To be fair, that one shouldn't be too hard to make one that's better than the one we have in the base UI toolkit.
Mm-hmm. Don't you mean the ones?
We wanted to make you look good, so you know we create like bad components to begin with.
Was that the one where you caught the asset glitch?
The asset
wasn't
glitch.
It the progress one where like there was a asset that was missing that made it jump?
Oh yeah. I was working on this this pre-caching of all the assets used in
the
system.
The Atlas.
Right, to save memory. And I was inspecting the result, and I could see the frames of the animation of the infinite progress, horizontal progress indicator. And I kept like looking for this bug because one frame of the animation was obviously missing. So there was a bug in my code. Till I realized that, no, my code was fine. UX had forgotten one of the frames of the animation.
Seen something in a Google app recently that's a similar sort of jump during the animation. Yeah.
So at least now we use vectors in real animation, so that's not an issue anymore.
It's smooth sailing from there.
Yes.
Sorry, we got off topic. Okay, progress.
Yeah, so that's another component. We have people opening issues on GitHub actually all the time, giving us suggestions for new components. And we're trying to build in conjunction with the other platforms. So we can't just jump and develop as soon as we can, but we encourage developers to give a suggestion for things that they want to see and upvote things that are more important to them so we can advocate for building those sooner.
Right. And what's difficult already being building a UI toolkit is that creating a new component is not that easy because you need to take into account keyboard navigation, accessibility, so many things. So when you build something custom in your app, you can cut many, many corners. But you cannot.
Yeah.
And your work gets even harder because you have this multi-platform aspect. I can imagine that you can't really say yes that often, or at least it's going to take so much work that you need to think about it quite hard.
Exactly. And make sure things like accessibility, like you mentioned, are covered and all those boxes are checked before we roll those out to users, because we want to make sure that our components are not only to spec, but are following the core material principles such as usability.
Right. And you have right to left and dark mode and all the themes. And
I have a feature request.
Uh-oh.
This is my favorite thing about being on the podcast, is being able to ask feature requests. When there's a microphone, guests are much more willing to say yes.
Yeah, they don't actually do it, but they'll say yes at the time.
Yeah, so
feel free to say yes.
I think it'd be great if we had a widget that helped with app updates, so letting you know that there's an app available. And then if there is one, then you sort of go through the whole flow. I think that'd be a cool thing for us to build so that people don't have to do this by hand. So take that back to the team, or if you can do
that'd
be awesome.
That's an interesting question. This kind of widget that is highly specialized and brings almost a
many
feature.
States. Yeah.
Right. Does that fit in MDC, or is MDC really more about generic components that are standalone, like smaller things?
So for the most part, in the past, we have been smaller components. We're trying to build out some larger components, such as navigation views that have more complex, multi-faceted aspects and utilize more aspects such as motion. And I think that is mostly what we're implementing in our next phase, is these larger, bigger scale components, moving away from things that have been already implemented in the Android framework, such as the text field and the button, and moving towards implementing the spec.
Date Picker is a very good example of that. Like this small thing that goes up, and you, and especially if you add a selection model too. If you want to have one for like letting you do selection range, and then you have two, and you drag between them. Like every travel app needs you to do that, for example.
Time to bring back Page Turner.
What?
Oh dear God, no! No, that's a reference to just before Android 1.0. In our first public SDKs, we had the Page Turner widget, which was this effect. It looked like you could turned a page, like there was a 3D effect of...
Wait, is this from the reader, from the reader app?
No, similar idea, but it was built, it was for our calculator app because the first calculator app looked like one of those old calculators that would print the results on paper tape. and so when you click clear, it would tear off the tape.
Sounds useful.
And that was a widget in the toolkit, and I got rid of it before 1.0 because I figured, you know, it doesn't sound that useful to many apps.
It was too specialized for the framework, but maybe not for MDC. Right? So just, you know, just for consideration. So I was going to ask about view groups. So Tor was saying, like, do you have all of the components of the toolkit? And obviously you don't. And I was thinking one area that you probably don't need, but I was wondering was view groups and layouts, right? So you don't have recycler view. Well, recycler view isn't visual in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But you include the views that are visual, so you could have, you know, a recycler view that contains those views, and that would be sufficient. But are there other layouts? Am I missing it somewhere?
So we do have some. We have tab layout.
Right.
We have behaviors that aren't exactly visual in themselves, but such as bottom sheet behavior.
Right, that's for coordinator layout, right?
Yes, yeah. For coordinator layout. Yeah. Coordinator layout.
I know, it's hard to say.
Yeah. Hard to enunciate. But some of those... we inherited from the design support library. But then such as tab layout, and bottom navigation view, they have multiple components within them.
But they have visual elements themselves, don't
true.
They?
So yes.
That, I mean, it, yeah.
So the
I
only
guess, is
true,
that the determinant?
What's determined between behaviors and...
No, I'm saying is that the determinant is if a component has visual aspects to it, then you'll probably need to have some material specific thing. So the background of tab layout is going to need to look material, therefore you need a material component
correct.
For it.
Right. Yeah. That's good.
As opposed to just pure containers like, you know, linear layout or recycler view or whatever.
Yeah, but coordinator layout is like that. It has no appearance on its own, right?
Yeah.
It's just basically I think it was the fab button layout, right? It's the one that has the special scrolling behavior.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Are there big mistakes you see developers do when they use material design library? Is there some, if this could be a PSA,
I love that smile. It won't show on the podcast.
Yes. Oh, if only I can name names.
Hi.
It's a good sign, right? That
we've got a lot of developers who have come back and shown what they've made
horrible,
with MDC.
Horrible things.
And they've come up with some really cool applications of the different theming attributes.
They're really creative.
Yeah, they are creative. I think a mistake would be just inheriting the theme and not using the theming capabilities of this design system. I think its strengths lie in the fact that you can make it personalized to your brand. And
but there's a default theme, right?
There is a default
theme. So as long as you
can start there.
You can start there, but play around with it and change the shapes, change the colors, change the text and see what it looks like. And
then get a designer to look at it.
Yeah. Should we make the default probably that too. Yeah.
Should we make the default theme look horrible to force people to think about it?
I don't know if people would want to use our components if it looked completely horrible when they first downloaded it.
Well, we tried that in the first few versions of Android and, you know, it was pretty successful anyway. It did work out. If there was one or a couple of things that you could change in the platform to make your life easier, given what you do, like, what would it be?
So that's all the time we have today.
And I'm not asking because now I manage the toolkit team, but you know.
We actually end up working pretty closely with AppCompat and a lot of the platform teams to coordinate our releases and development cycle. Like, we'll have bugs that will get filed against us, but we'll actually need some support from AppCompat in order to provide some backward compatibility to use a color state list or some other aspect of the framework. And they've actually been so great about iterating quickly with us and helping us make our deadlines and releases and get things out to our users. So
you're saying the APIs are perfect. I agree.
I don't have any critiques.
I mean, I guess it goes back to my earlier question, which is, you know, what is difficult about developing the components that you develop and how could it be easier? Like what are the architectural constraints that you run into that
make
it difficult?
A lot of it is that the API service for some things has already been kind of predefined by some of the historical components. And so then when we're trying to match the material spec and match the other platforms, but also provide backwards compatibility to some of these older framework components, that creates some friction.
Yep.
And sometimes it's hard to appease both. And so in those aspects, we sometimes have to make a trade-off between whether or not we end up inheriting from those older framework components or doing a complete rewrite and trying to match the material spec, which is, with some of the newer components that are coming up, is some of the trade-offs that we're making.
That okay. makes sense. So I guess the action item for our listeners then would be to do what? To
try MDC. Download our, use our theme, depend on our new material alpha 05 library.
I think the easiest way, because, you know, we added this feature in Studio 3.4, here's another PSA, where sometimes it's hard to know the right group ID and artifact ID to put in your build.gradle file. But if you go in your source editor and you type one of the class names from there, like I think coordinator layout would work, and then alt enter, it'll suggest importing the right thing. So then you get the dependency added. Then I guess then you should go and change the version up to the alpha.
I think actually in the dependencies now, it gives you suggestions that there's a newer version.
Yeah, in the product searcher dialog. That's right. Yeah. That's also new in 3.4. Yeah.
So where would people go to read about, you know, the release notes for the latest version or whatever the SDK reference docs?
Yeah, so a couple places. Material.io has all of our visual documentation, developer documentation. The Android developer site also has all of our class documentation as well as descriptions of what all of our methods do. Just and then
as
we,
part of support library, or is it a separate thing? It's a separate thing now, right?
So it is technically a separate thing from Jetpack and Android X, but that is a result of us working closely with the other material teams. We do coordinate releases with them, and our documentation is on the support website as well. And then GitHub. We write about all of our releases on GitHub, highlighting what's new, and have some how-tos on how to set up your app, how to use our themes, how to use the different components. So those are the top three.
And that's also on GitHub, that if you want to file bugs or feature requests, is that where people should go?
Exactly. Actually, if you go to GitHub, we have some information on how to use our Bugganizer, which is our current state-of-the-art practice. We've tried to use some calibration on what works best for developers. So we'll respond to pull requests and issues on GitHub, but we try to direct people to Bugganizer as it integrates well with the workflow. And we also allow people to ask questions on Stack Overflow. We always respond to those. And as well as on GitHub, yeah.
Is there anything we forgot to ask?
No, you guys are inquisitive.
All right.
It's not that we're inquisitive, that we don't know anything.
Yes. I think we've proven that today.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks.
Thank you so much for having me.